Live from the Regent Suites in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac. And if it is the second Monday of the month, and this is a weird split that doesn't happen very often because the second Monday and Tuesday are usually back-to-back. Not this time. It is Understanding Autism, starring Kimberly Isaac and Paul Loudon. Kim, how are you?
Doing well.
And Paul, are you calling in from Houston today?
I'm here, yeah.
There you are. How's the weather out there?
Wet and rainy today, but it's been pretty decent otherwise.
Wow, it's nice out here. About 80, I think. Anyway, so here we are in different states, maybe different states of mind, different states geographically. And Kim, good topic today.
We do. Before we get into the topic, I just want to introduce ourselves for those of you tuning in for the first time. My name is Kim Isaac, and I'm an autism specialist. I have a specialty in working with teens and adults on the autism spectrum, and I am a co-host of this radio show.
And I'm Paul Levin. I'm a 31-year-old adult on the autism spectrum who was diagnosed at 23, and I share my experiences with autism.
Very, very good. And that's what makes this such a great show, information and the heart and soul that people want to know. So this is about the topic about traveling. With, if you have anyone in your family on the spectrum, no matter how old,
yeah.
How young, right?
Yeah, well, you know, this time of year, it's springtime, and some people have already had or having spring break coming up. But ultimately, what's coming up is summer, and I know that's a big travel time for people. And, you know, there's a lot of planning and thought that needs to go into planning a family vacation when you have, you know, a child of any age on the spectrum. And so Paul and I wanted to talk about that today and give families some ideas, things to think about before and as they're planning their vacations. But I wanted to start with a couple of things that I found online that I felt were really encouraging as they relate to traveling. I know last year I'd heard a story of JetBlue having this event for families where they allowed families of kids with autism to come practice the airport, I guess, what should I say, the airport experience.
You mean like the security type of
security, right. And so that happened, I think, in the fall of 2013, but more recently, some other airlines have come together, JetBlue, United, and Delta, to form this group, Wings for Autism. And now at Boston Logan Airport, they're having this event annually. And so families can come with their kids and they can practice, you know, going, you know, everything from parking the car, going into the airport, going through security. And it's really neat. They're actually working on it with some other airports. I know this month, at the end of the month, Pulsa is going to be having an event too. And I'm going to post links to the Wings for Autism on our Facebook page so you can check it out. You know, depending on where you live, you can find out more information. But I think one of the things, well, there's a lot of things that excite me about this. One thing is that it really creates an opportunity for the community to understand autism better. We always talk about, you know, beyond awareness is really getting an understanding. And for people at the airport, whether it's, you know, just people who work there, the TSA, the flight crew themselves, they get an opportunity to really, you know, interact with these kids and their families. And that leads to, you know, maybe, you know, just passengers kind of compassion and that welcoming attitude, and I just feel like it's a really good opportunity for people to become more familiar with autism, you know, live, front and center, versus reading about it on the news and things like that. And so, you know, what they do in this program is they, you know, they go through the security process and all that. They go on the plane. They actually start the engines of the plane so that the kids can hear, you know, and feel what the engine's going to feel like. They don't take off or anything, but they get that experience. They go through the safety announcements and all of that, and then they actually get to visit the cockpit and talk with the pilots and stuff. And I'm really encouraged by that, not just for the individuals, but for their families, because I know it's a very stressful thing for families also to travel. They want to take their kids places, whether it's vacation or even just visiting relatives. And, you know, airplane travel can be quite stressful for anybody, but for people on the spectrum with some of their sensitivity issues and the amount of space you have on a flight, a lot of times, you know, you just don't have a lot of, you know, personal space and room to move around and stuff like that. So I'm going to post a link to this as well, but I'm really excited to hear that they're expanding on that program.
So there, it's just not an experience for people on the spectrum, and, of course, the families as well, but it's also for the TSA people, for employees,
right,
even for maybe passengers, other passengers, to know, hey, you know, there's different, really different ways of, you know, doing things out there and different compassions, and I shouldn't say different compassions, but there are. But hopefully everyone will learn as a group to be patient and don't realize or don't assume that because someone may have trouble going through security, it doesn't mean they're defiant. It doesn't mean that at all.
Right. They could be really scared.
It's
a lot of noises, a lot of lights, a lot of different people, you know, telling you what to do, and you have to move at a certain rate sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that in these cases, the TSA, they are very patient. They kind of, you know, slow things down, not to rush the kids and stuff like that. But
do they know, in that literature, they knew it was, you know, people on the spectrum are coming, right?
Right. It's
a planned event. So I wonder if there's some training going on saying, hey, just because it's a planned event doesn't mean it doesn't happen unplanned.
Well, I think that's what they're working towards. And this Wings for Autism is connected with Autism Services in Charles River Center, Massachusetts. And together, they actually, one family started this. They had a child. They went to that Charles River Center for help originally in 2010 and said, we really want to take our son on a trip. You know, what can you do? And so they reached out to the airlines. And so it's you know, evolved from there. But I'm really excited about it because of all those reasons. I think it's going to be really, really helpful. Now, one thing I don't know is what age groups they've encouraged, and it kind of sparked an idea that I was going to mention to Paul is, you know, maybe that's something that we could get involved in somehow, because I don't know if they've factored in also adults or is it specifically focused on younger children.
Mm. That would be helpful, right?
I was going to say, and so many things are just focused on younger children, that that the world for adults with autism is still very, very in its beginning stages.
Yeah, which is unfortunate, but maybe this will lead to something. And I have heard JetBlue is a really good organization, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not too familiar with them, but I know from, like I said, last year, or maybe it was even in 2010 too, but I know in 2013 they actually had a formal event.
Hmm.
And so now they've got United and Delta on board too. Which
That's
really cool.
Oh, that's huge.
Yeah.
Blue is not the biggest airlines, but I heard they're good quality.
Yeah.
They're very...
And actually, last year, I think their event was at JFK in New York, now the annual event is, I think, at Boston Logan. But it did say that they're branching out to, like, 50 other airports, and I know at the end of this month in Tulsa, there's one.
Wow.
So
that's excellent. That's really good. That's a good approach to help so many people.
Yes, and then I found a couple of other resources that I thought were really interesting related to travel for those of you, you know, trying to figure out what you want to do this summer. There's an organization, Autism Adventure Travel, and it was started by Ashley Berg. She's a mom of two. She has one child on the spectrum, and it's affiliated with Peaks Cruises and Tours nationwide, and they actually have cruises that have trained specialists, ABA certified specialists, speech therapists, occupational therapists, physical therapists, psychologists, and professional babysitters on board. So it's actually a cruise for families where you can go and you have a lot of support.
Wow.
You know that, you know, people are going to have that, again, we talk about understanding, at least a much better understanding than, you know, just maybe an average situation. But so that's an option, too. I'm going to post that link on our Facebook as well.
Do you know what cruise lines?
It's all it said was it's associated with Peaks, P-E-E-K-S. And so So, yeah, I think that's on their website to look it up. But I was encouraged by that to give families an option to have a really, you know, great opportunity to do something a little bit grander than just the staycation or, you know, taking
that's
a short road trip, if that's appropriate for their family. So I thought that was pretty neat.
But options are always good.
Absolutely. I think very much so. And it's nice for a family to actually be able to go somewhere together. I mean, I know families who have kids with autism of all ages who have to do separate family vacations, honestly, because their kids cannot travel the same. There's not the same kind of support structure that the parents would need to actually even be able to have some rest and relaxation themselves. So I thought that was pretty cool that they had such a, you know, a well-put-together support system.
How about you, Paul? I mean, that's a really good – it's a great idea. And Paul, how would that help families with, you know, kids or relatives on the spectrum?
You know, I'm not really sure. This is one area, again, I'm not exactly sure what you're asking. Sorry.
Well, I mean, it, with these options of having a program in place on cruise ships, for example, maybe it'll spread to other vacation places where they have specialists that can allow families as a group, as a unit, to go together. It would seem like it would be, you know, a nice new experience, and or maybe not new, but a different type of experience.
I mean, I think that having therapeutic options can be good, but I think in a lot of cases, I mean, especially with autism, there's the value of familiarity that, you know, a new or different therapist is probably going to be just as disturbing as a new and different environment for, you know, going on the cruise or whatever. So I can see it as being helpful for some children, but I think a lot more of the value is going to go into preparation and previewing than anything else that, you know, maybe rather than having, you know, therapeutic options on the cruise, have, you know, a series of preview events leading up to the cruise where you can take your kid for a day to go tour the boat. You can take a kid a day to go, you know, see other things just so that for like the 3 months leading up to it or whatever that you've bought your tickets, I see that there's a lot of room for improvement. And I think that, you know, it's a good start, but I think that other ideas might offer a bit more in the long term.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, and I definitely see that they could probably benefit from, you know, just from people's ideas, like some of the stuff that we're talking about. And also, but the good thing about this, though, is that these professionals will understand on some level why these kids are maybe reacting, which is a plus. But I do think that this support structure, in a way, really, I guess, supports the parents more than anything else, so that parents don't have to feel, because I know some parents, they have great difficulty going out in public and really worrying, you know, are people going to wonder why my child is having a meltdown in public and they're 10 years old? And, you know, so I think I could see the comfort mostly for the parents in terms of, okay, people are going to know, you know, I'm not a bad parent. My child's not a bad child. They're going to understand, okay, this is new. And, but I'm sure that, I'm sure that they're probably continuing, you know, to evolve how they do things, but definitely has to start.
Like Paul said, it may be room for improvement, and I like the preview concept that Paul talked about. That might be a huge benefit, actually.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And we'll talk more about previewing, I'm sure, as we talk about other things in the show, because that's, I think, a huge importance to something so different, like taking a big trip. And
but first, we have a break coming up. So let's take a quick break. This is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4, starring, of course, Kimberly Isaac and Paul Loudon. And we'll be right back.
Birenbaum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You are listening to Understanding Autism, part of the Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. I'm Dave Isaac, alongside Kimberly Isaac and Paul Loudon in Houston, Texas. We're talking about travel, vacation, maybe other type of travel. Could be business, visiting relatives. Doesn't matter for people on the spectrum. And Kim, you have a few more things you want to share.
I just had one more resource that I wanted to mention. Again, I'm going to post all of this on our Facebook page. But another organization that I found was called Autism on the Seas. And that's actually through Royal Caribbean.
Oh, that's pretty well done.
And they're working on it. They don't quite have the support staff in place that the Peaks Cruises does, but they actually, on their website, they had a lot of kind of a protocol that they helped families with, and part of it sort of included the thing that Paul mentioned, is just helping them do the planning and the preparation, and they had a lot of dietary support because some people on the spectrum have different kinds of food allergies and sensitivities. So that was just another option that I like that there's options, and I like there's a start to something. It may not be a perfect setup, but it is something. I mean, it's starting, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot more of that just over time.
And that's good, because that means, if companies are willing to provide this, that means there's a need for this. And they see it as a need.
Well, yeah, so it definitely is.
So I think that's a really good sign for these companies that are participating.
I agree. And so anyway, I thought we could talk about travel in a little bit of a different light, which is just Paul and I sharing some of our thoughts on, kind of from the beginning, is just how to decide, you know, it's like, okay, summer's coming. We want to take a vacation. You know, you have a family member with autism. You know, Paul, what are your thoughts in terms of, you know, considering the perspective of the person on the spectrum before deciding a vacation spot?
Well, I think that it's one of those things where a lot of times what is traditionally relaxing for people or, you know, a getaway, it can often be the opposite for someone on the autism spectrum because you're uprooting things and changing around aspects of their life. So one thing to sort of always be remembering is that a vacation for someone with autism may not actually be a vacation, that it may be sort of the opposite for them, where all of you are having fun. You may have to come to terms with the idea that it may not be like that for them, that nothing you can do may make it the kind of vacation you want it to be for them. And sometimes that's okay, that you know, what you're doing is that everyone needs vacations, and you may have to come to terms with the idea that a vacation for the person on the spectrum may have to be a separate activity from the vacation for everyone else in the family, that maybe you go and spend a few days at the beach, but then maybe you also try to come with a way to spend a few days of quiet time where you're not doing things that stress the person with autism as a separate event, because there is never going to be a one-size-fits-all solution for any group of people, whether they involve people with autism or not, but it can be different enough for the person on the spectrum that you may find yourself not able to meet the goals that you thought you had in advance.
That's a really good point. And I think, I mean, especially just remembering that the understanding piece, whereas what we might think is one thing, whether it's we're deciding this would be a fun vacation, that doesn't mean another person feels the same or is coming from the same viewpoint as you. So I think that's a really important point to consider. I also like to tell families to consider some more of the physical things, like the sensory issues, you know, going certain places, you know, and this is actually kind of supporting what Paul just said is, you know, some families are like, I really want to take my kids to Disney World or Disneyland. And, you know, what kid, you would think in your mind, what kid wouldn't love that? You know, rides, food, and everything. But if you can imagine, you know, a child on the spectrum who has great sensitivities, whether it's to sounds or smells, you know, things like that.
Especially sounds. Isn't that really
sounds, tough? That could be quite overwhelming for a person on the spectrum who has sound sensitivities.
And is it just volume sensitivity, or is it the different types of sounds that you hear at
a
Disneyland type of
My experiences have shown that it's not so much the volume, although that's part of it. Different frequencies tend to bother them. I guess it's a little bit of everything, but not necessarily one or the other.
And crowds?
And the crowds, too.
That can be overwhelming to anyone.
I mean, definitely. It can definitely be overwhelming. And just, you know, like I was saying, the smells, you know, to us, we might find it completely fun and exciting that every 10 feet we can get a new snack. You know, they have the churros and the pickles and the popcorn, but your nose is like on overload, you know, smelling all those things. So as a parent, it can be tricky to think, you know, automatically it's like, well, this is like heaven for children, but not necessarily, you know, depending on their sensory needs. So I like to make sure parents, you know, consider that, they think about that, they understand what their child's sensitivities are as part of the planning process. And also, you know, considering their interests as well, which I think, Paul, you probably, you know, you might have thoughts on that more than I do as far as considering the interest side of it.
Yeah, but I'm not exactly sure what you're asking. You know, all I have to say is what seems obvious to me, which is, you know what your child likes and what relaxes your child and what your child enjoys doing, and, you know, a vacation is probably not the best time to try to expand their interests. That, you know, you're working on that, you know, in therapy a lot of the times, trying to push them out of their comfort zone. But a vacation, if it's going to be an actual vacation, shouldn't be an extension of therapy, or it's, you know, not going to be a vacation for them. It's you know, you can't really have your cake and eat it too in that case.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a good point. And that's kind of what I guess what I was wondering what your perspective is on that, because I think parents do see And I can understand it, why, you know, hey, a new experience, learning. And honestly, naturally, that stuff will happen to different degrees. I mean, you're in a new spot, you experience something new, you know. But yeah, just considering maybe the stress level of that, though, you know, and just realizing that, yeah, you might want to plan, let's teach them this, let's show them this, let's, you know, let them experience this. You might have to harness that excitement a little bit and really remember that.
An alternative might even be to turn that on its head, and instead of saying, you know, let's have them experience this, let's see what they think about this, is use the vacation as an opportunity to learn about what they like. Try to make it so that the vacation is where they can have fun and watch them and how they choose to have fun and how they choose to experience things. And it gives you a new environment to see how your child reacts to the new environment, and lets you learn, you know, what you can do to help improve the quality of life.
And it's a new environment for the parents, too. Maybe less distractions for them to become maybe a little more patient, a little bit more understanding. Use that as, like Paul said, not really a vacation, but a way of being curious in terms of how curious can you be to really make sure you're learning more about your child or relative.
It's very relationship building when you do something like that, when you're really kind of putting down your own agenda and saying, you know, I want to understand this better. I want this, you know, I want to be supportive to what my child is interested in, even if it's different than what my interests are, you know. And I think that's also a good example for the child.
And that should
that's
be
not
the
one way or one way. Let's compromise. Let's do some things that, you know, you're interested in. Maybe we'll do something that I'm interested in. You know, more of that give and take, which, you know, a lot of people will, I guess, complain that people on the spectrum don't do, but I think it requires us to be good role models of that.
And is that a classic definition of a good parent, to be sacrificing in that sense? And sacrificing not in a hard way, not in a disturbing way, but letting go, I should say, is a better word, of traditional vacations to get away, but really get together and not getting away, but getting more together in a new environment.
Just connecting differently.
Yeah, and I think if people reframe what a vacation is, I think it might be easier for parents to let go of the traditional vacation, because, like Paul said, it may not be for everyone.
Yeah, and
it probably won't be for everyone.
I think there's ways to organize it, too. I mean, considering every member of the family, and I think Paul mentioned this, too, but you know, you can also designate certain times, like where you are going to just plan to do things. You know, maybe one night the parents are going to do something just themselves, you know, and then the next day they're going to just enjoy, you know, being curious and spend time with their child and just let them sort of lead. And then maybe the next day, you know, you can designate how you do it so maybe everybody gets a little bit of something that, that you know, they want out of vacation. But just keeping the mindset of balancing that out and being mindful of the individual's, you know, needs, interests, sensitivities, and things like that.
What about adults on the spectrum, let's say, that go away just with friends or by themselves? Is this any thoughts on that? How about you, Paul? Any thoughts like adults on the spectrum that go away by themselves with friends? Is that different? Do people view that as a vacation? How does that work?
You know, it's going to vary from situation to situation. I mean, I can see that, like, you know, an adult on the spectrum may go on a trip with friends knowing that they're not really going to enjoy it, but knowing that, you know, it's important to their friends. And, you know, it's just, you know, it can be difficult because, you know, again, what makes an enjoyable vacation for someone on the spectrum is often different from what makes an enjoyable vacation for neurotypical people. And sometimes there's overlap, but sometimes, you know, it's really hard to explain to a group of friends, especially friends who may not know you're on the spectrum or may not understand enough about autism, that, like, you know, for you, this isn't a vacation. For you, you're spending time with friends, but you're going to need some recovery time afterwards. You're going to need maybe recovery time at the end of the night or whatever. Maybe you're going to skip a day, but it's not because you don't want to spend time with them, but it's because it's sort of just burnt you out emotionally or whatever. So it can be very challenging for adults on the spectrum, too, just because even when people know about autism, you know, it's very hard for people to believe that, you know, fun can also be tiring, or things that they think are relaxing aren't relaxing for you, or things like that.
How about for you personally, Paul? Would you go on a vacation just like by yourself versus friends? Would there be a difference from your own perspective?
Between a vacation on my own and a vacation with friends? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a vacation on my own, I have complete control of. I have, you know, scheduling. If I don't feel like I want to do anything for a day, I can just choose to skip a day. And you know, others are like, well, you know, we only have 3 days in, you know, Seattle. We have to see this, this, and this or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'm on my own. I don't have to do that. You know, I won't feel guilty about a missed day because, for me, my relaxation and my feeling good is the most important thing rather than getting the most out of our trip. So, yeah, no, it's very different if I were to go on a trip on my own.
That's very cool. That's very good insights. And let's take a quick break right now. This is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday of the month from 3 to 4. Kimberly Isaac, Paul Loudon are the stars of the show. We'll be right back.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Weidenauer, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com. At Beerham Baum & Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
And you are listening to Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday of the month from 3 to 4. I'm Dave Isaac, alongside Kimberly Isaac, Paul Loudon in Houston, Texas, talking about traveling with loved ones on the spectrum. We've given some interesting information about certain companies that are getting involved and making it, trying to at least make it easier for people on the spectrum to experience firsthand airport situations, perhaps some of the cruises. You talked about Peaks and Royal Caribbean trying to put something together. So hats off to them, you know, for attempting it. And you know, that's how things, you know, you got to
start somewhere.
Yeah.
And we also talked a little bit about planning phases in terms of, you know, before just even the decision process of deciding where to go. I also wanted to talk about, you know, once you do decide, I feel like one of the best things you can do to help make the vacation, whatever it is you decided, to be as smooth and enjoyable as possible is to do some planning ahead of time, whether that's, you know, printing out pictures of the places you're going to be going, practicing staying overnight at a local hotel, you know, giving some practice to the person so that they get the opportunity at their own pace, you know, ahead of time to get a little bit familiar with whatever they can before getting there. A lot of times online, you know, hotels and things, they have videos of the hotel or a photo gallery, you know, looking at that, looking at what amenities are there. I know because, and actually I know Paul had an experience with this recently, but regarding internet, you know, so many people on the spectrum, they really rely on internet to help them decompress and organize themselves and, you know, and feel, you know, comforted and rested even. And so I think it's important to investigate those things and also to let the individual know that you have considered that. You know, I am going to ask about the internet. I'm going to make sure, you know, so that they have a level of, you know, of comfort from that standpoint. Now, the other thing that is going to be valuable is also previewing the concept that there's some things that we know and there are also things we don't know, you know, because a lot of unpredictable things could happen. And so even though it may not feel any better necessarily to the person when something unpredictable happens, I feel like you've given them the courtesy of at least knowing it's possible something, you know, could be different than what we're planning. So that's something else that I think about when I talk to families about how they're going to be planning. And also just involving the individual in the process, you know, and just throughout the experience. So this kind of planning, making a packing list, like what are we going to need? Because maybe they'll come up with something that, aside from, you know, some of the basic needs, maybe something that would help them to feel more, you know, organized and calm, you know. So I think it's good to talk about those things in advance, you know, make a calendar. Some of the little kids, you know, do very well with those picture calendars and knowing exactly how many days until vacation, how many days they will be away, you know, so that they know when they're going to be coming home back to their own things and stuff like that.
Now, you mentioned, like, one tip was, like, practice going to a hotel locally.
As an option, if it's appropriate. I mean,
would you tell someone on the spectrum, this is just practice? Because the word practice, I think if you told people off the spectrum, it could create a little more comfort, like, oh, this is the real thing. It's just practice, no matter what you're doing. But that word sort of de-stress people.
Well, I don't know. I can't speak for every single person. I know that as a therapist, I would explain why we're going to be going, and I would use that term practice, and just to help get comfortable and kind of like give it a try and find out what we find out. Because once you go through a process, a lot of times things happen that you forgot to think about beforehand. You know, like, I don't know, maybe let's say you're going to go check in the hotel and there's a really, really long line. Oh, I forgot to mention, we might have to wait, you know. I mean, there's just a lot of things that come up.
Are the rooms not clean yet?
Or something, right.
That
you
happens
never know.
A lot.
That has happened to me. I've had some very, actually, very crazy shows.
Or you walk into a room and someone else is there.
That actually happened to me.
I know.
But anyway, but even some of the more common, you know, just things like, you know, that you can possibly experience. But if they know ahead of time, you know, we're going to be taking a bigger vacation, we're going to do a small one as a practice so we can find out what we learn and just give it a try. You know, just keeping it really
It's a good idea.
It's not a performance thing. Like, okay, you need to behave in the hotel, and you know, it's just like, let's experience this. Let's see how it goes. We'll go slow. We'll bring things that are comforting, you know, just to give them, you know, a, kind of a mini version.
So do you think, Kim and Paul, that depending where you are in the spectrum, that the kids, adults, whoever it is on the spectrum, feel pressure that they have to perform and behave in a certain way when they're out? I think that's possible. Paul, you first.
You know, it's pretty likely, yes. That one thing that you get, especially if you haven't been diagnosed or from people who don't know you are on the spectrum, is you get a lot of pressure to perform a certain way. So, you know, and then, you know, you get that on vacations. You get a lot of pressure, like, you know, why aren't you enjoying it? You know, do you not like us? Are you unhappy with us? Are you upset with, you know, you get a lot of odd feedback on the spectrum. And, you know, that's part of why early diagnosis is so important, is that when you don't know someone's on the spectrum, it causes a lot of bad feedback both ways. But then once someone's on the spectrum, it's really important for the people who are around him or her, who are, you know, helping, to understand as much as they can, just so that, you know, they're not putting all this extra pressure on them that doesn't really make any sense. And it wouldn't make any sense doing it with a neurotypical person too, but with a neurotypical person, you're not as likely to do it just because the initial misunderstandings aren't there.
Well, good point, Kim. Same question.
Now I've forgotten the question.
The question.
What was the exact question?
The exact question was performance. Certain
yes.
people on the spectrum, would they feel this need to, you know, to comply, conform with the expectations of either society, parents, whatever the case, or hotel rules? And,
yeah.
And that could be terrifying, I'm thinking,
yeah.
right now.
Well, I definitely agree with Paul. I would guess, fairly certain that would happen. Draw would happen, or like a fleeing feeling. Like, oh my gosh, I have to perform, or oh my gosh, I can't handle this. I'm just going to be alone. Some kind of extreme to that level.
And parents need to know that, don't they?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And honestly, they've got to know to some degree just by living with them that that's a possibility. But when you're thinking about it, when you're away from home, and just remembering that it's so much harder for them to adapt and feel, you know, comforted and regulated, more so than it might be for us. You know, because to us, trying new things, although not really me, actually, but a lot of people, they like trying new things. They're adventurous. I'm actually not that
You're
way.
You're not adventurous?
Not really.
You travel so much.
That's true, but that doesn't, I mean, that's a different story. But no, but I mean, for some people, they'd find, you know, pleasurable feelings and a pleasant experience by doing new things. So here someone might be saying, hey, let's take your mind off it, let's go do this new thing, which actually is like traumatizing. You know,
that would be like saying, hey, let's do something new, like let's go up on an upside down roller coaster.
Oh, yeah.
That wouldn't help me at all.
No, that would make, I would probably run. That's not me. I wouldn't do that. Mm. But yeah, but no, I'm sure that to some level it feels, you know, it could definitely feel that way. And so I think, though, that going into it as the parent with that mindset of, you know, I mean, there are some things that you need to do to keep your kids safe. They have to have some basic rules. But as far as, like, performance socially and active participating, you have to really adjust your awareness and your expectations to give your child a chance to be where they are and, you know, have a good time and make the connections.
So let me ask you this, and maybe we should take our final break, but and when we come back, the question is simply this, is that what can you do to sort of ease the pressure, to relieve the pressure with someone on the spectrum when there are high expectations? And, I mean, obviously the obvious one is to lower expectations, but that may not be the answer. Let's go on a break and see what Paul and Kim have to say after this break. This is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4. We'll be right back.
At Birenbaum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Again, you are listening to Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday from 3 to 4, starring Kimberly Isaac and Paul Loudon. And Kim and Paul, I left you with a question that I think is really important. It might be an easy or hard answer, I'm not sure, but when people on the spectrum have expectations, and they do, I mean, expectations are all around us, whether it's with parents, society, the place that you're at currently, strangers walking around. Is there a possibility in terms of traveling, which is a topic of today's show, to relieve some of the pressure with people on the spectrum without lowering expectations or without adjusting expectations? Paul, you want to go first on that?
I'm not even entirely sure what you're asking, unfortunately. It's sort of hard for me to fit those ideas together because, as far as I know, I mean, the expectations create the pressure, so you can't really lower the pressure without changing the expectations, in my mind. Like, they're sort of one thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely expectations, but I'm wondering within the expectations, is there flexibility? Can there be, you know, whether...
I think that depends on, I mean, how I would answer that is when a person is clearly on overload, there's absolutely no point to continuing to expect something out of them. If they are not, they don't have the mental resources at that point to do what you're asking, and it really does more damage than good because this person learns that they're, you know, kind of failing, you know, and it's not going to make, they're not going to be motivated to try. You know, so from my perspective, you really do need to adjust to allow for the person to become more regulated emotionally, mentally. When they're in that place, you can slowly introduce or slowly expect things, but I would say do it incrementally and help them to make sure that they're able to manage what you're giving them and not just pile on, you know, a backpack of bricks here, you know. So taking it slow. But the important part to really know, though, is, you know, trying to force someone when they're just on overload already will fail every time and get worse.
So you're taking the assumption it's going to be pretty much overload.
If it's overload. And the thing is, as a parent, everybody, you know, gets to know their own children and stuff like that. But, you know, knowing your own child, you know, some stress, you know, moderate to mild stress can be productive. But when there's a threshold where it's like, I can't, you know, total overload, you really do have to change. If you want something productive, something healthy, just for the child's emotional well-being and trust for you, you have got to change your expectations in those moments and make the focus on helping them to re-regulate, get mentally organized, and get de-escalate a bit.
And my point wasn't, I mean, I think there's a difference between lowering expectations and changing expectations.
Well, adjusting to meet the needs of the person, because people really can't understand. I can try to understand. There's no way I could. When somebody's mental resources are not allowing them, physically not allowing them to do what someone's telling them to do, I can't even imagine how horrible that would be, stress-wise, emotionally, self-esteem, all of that stuff. So people really need to be aware of that sort of thing.
Makes sense. Good tips.
So actually,
things to think about.
Yes, yes. And actually, we do have, you know, the last bit of our show. I did have some questions. People send me some questions, and I actually have one that is directed to Paul. And this is, actually, it's kind of funny. It relates to what we just talked about, is this person wants to know, Paul, how do you handle group situations like family parties, family reunions, or even birthday parties of friends?
I don't know what I'm being asked there. I mean,
maybe just describe your experience of that then. Going to a group gathering.
Every family gathering, every birthday party, everything is different. Whether I have, you know, where it's at, do I have some place to get away to or not? Am I expected to be attending? Is it something like say a wedding where I can't walk away in the middle of the wedding, or is it something like, you know, just gathering at the grandparents' house for dinner or something where I can, you know, go hang out outside for a little while and cool down or whatever. It's very different. So it's one of those things where I can't offer any sort of real answer there because it's so different from situation to situation. The thing is I don't see it as any different from any other situation. You know, you look at what you need, and you look at whether it's possible for you to get what you need and what ways you can do it.
Okay. I have another question. This one is related to employment, and this person wants to know, I am on the spectrum, and I am starting to interview for jobs. Should I tell my employer that I'm on the spectrum in the interview?
There's sort of two sides to that. I would say, do you think that your autism is going to affect your job performance in any way? Because, you know, only you know your own history. Did it cause any problems at school? Has it caused any problems anywhere else? Like, if your autism is significant enough that people are going to notice something is odd about you, then I would say absolutely yes, you should make it known, because, you know, making it known before anything goes wrong is better than making it known after something goes wrong, because then it sounds like an excuse. That, you know, the problem is that some people, you know, may judge you and judge your employability based on that, and that's, in my opinion, you know, something that is wrong and we need to have addressed, but it's the state of the affairs right now. But it's one of those situations where I think that, you know, it's also sort of unfair to an employer if you don't tell them about things that, you know, may interfere with your ability to do the job that you're applying for. So you're the only person who can judge, but I feel like, you know, in any case where you're asking, should I tell them about my autism, if you think you might need to tell them about it, you probably ought to. You may want to spend some time talking with people around you about how best to do it, people who know you well, who, you know, you can talk about, like, you know, okay, I want to let my employer know that I have this thing, autism, that may interfere with my ability. You know, how do I tell them and what should I tell them about it? And that's sort of something that people who know you well can help with. But I kind of feel like I would have to.
Okay. Yeah, that's a tricky one. I mean, from my perspective, it is difficult. I feel like you do have to weigh out, you know, what you know about yourself and your past experiences. I mean, I work with some adults who, unfortunately, they've had repeated situations in their places of business where they were fired for pretty much the same thing, and it does relate to their autism. It has nothing to do with their intelligence or their character or anything like that. So I think it would be good to probably talk to a trusted friend, a professional, and kind of have someone help support you in thinking about, you know, weighing out the options on that one. I do have one last question, again, another one for Paul. This person wants to know, I am looking to make new friends. I feel like I should make friends with neurotypical people. Do you find it easier to relate to people with autism, or would you, where do a majority of your friends come from?
You know, I mean, I don't have that many friends that, you know, I'm regularly social with. And, you know, I don't have any friends who are specifically currently diagnosed with ASD. You know, I know, you know, a couple people who were diagnosed with it in the past but never received treatment and are sort of considered to have grown out of it, or probably should be diagnosed with it but haven't received a diagnosis and are getting on fine in their life. So I have a few friends who, you know, may be in that area and may not. They may be on the edges of it. And then I have other friends who definitely aren't. And I think that, you know, it's not really something to take into account so much. Like, I wouldn't go looking for neurotypical friends or go looking for friends with ASD. I would just go looking for people who share an interest and who I can become comfortable around. And I think that, you know, I've met a lot of people with ASD where, you know, some aspect of how it shows up in them makes it harder for me to become comfortable around them. And then I've met other people with ASD that I relate to really well. And it's the same with neurotypical people. I think that worrying about whether you should be looking for neurotypical people or ASD people is maybe not the right question to ask.
Well, wow, that's a good ending to the show, because this show just flew by. And if you want to hear a replay, go to breakradioshow.com, Understanding Autism. Actually, go to Archives first and find Understanding Autism. A lot of great information today. Lots.
Good. I'm glad. And I will be posting these links, the travel links, to our Facebook page. And also, a couple times a week, I will start posting some of these tips that we talked about, just so you have a refresher in your mind as you start to plan for your summer vacation.
Yeah, it's coming up. And Paul, thank you so much. Well, we'll see you next month. What, May? It's already May?
It will be.
Oh, my. It's going to be hot out here, Paul. Anyway, Paul, thank you. And then, Kim, of course, you can go to Facebook page. Right?
Yes. We have a Facebook page. It's Understanding Autism. And that's where we post inspirations and just tips and things like that. We love to hear comments from you.
Excellent. Paul Alden, Kimberly Isaac, thank you so much. Everyone, have a great night.